Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info.
There were people in that congregation today, alive today, because Rich stood in the breach and protected others from harm's way.
Hi, everybody. Kate Delaney. The church shooting that happened in Texas that so many people are talking about leads us off because there were so many that came out to the funeral and so many that came out to pay their respects to not only the victim in the shooting, but also to talk to the hero. And you just heard the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, there. Kate Delaney, it is a new year, and this was a frightening, sad thing that happened. Richard White, just 67, he was buried on Thursday afternoon at Western Hills Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. You heard Abbott. He attended and spoke at the service. He's one of two victims murdered Sunday morning at the West Freeway Church. And it could have been so much worse. And it's sad for this family. It's terrible. But what happened was, luckily, you had some very incredibly adept people who were paying attention to what was going on, and you had quick thinkers that jumped up, a security team, and so they shot and nailed the gunman, 43-year-old Keith Kinnunen, and it was just awful. Tony Wallace was also killed in this attack. So two people, as I mentioned. But awful to think, because I always say this on this show, that look, schools, churches, place of work, stores, malls, whatever. Why do these have to be like we are in the middle of a war zone? And once again, it was shattered. And you know what? I know three people who had family members that were in that church, and lucky for them, there was somebody who reacted, or two people that reacted right away. Thank goodness, because we could be talking about something so much worse. The gunman was shot by Jack Wilson, who was a member of the church's volunteer security team. And that's what I've said has to happen. We saw some of these other church shootings. You have to have somebody who is armed and who can react and who can do something, and that's exactly what happened there. All right, speaking of reacting, this is a huge story. I can't emphasize enough how big this story is. The Pentagon launching an airstrike that killed a major figure in Iran, a military official. General Soleimani, one of Iran's most revered military leaders, dead, is what they're saying. They confirmed the hit. And when the tensions have been escalating between the U.S. and Iran since the president dumped out of the nuclear accord and really pushed sanctions down the throat of Iran, which I thought, by the way, was the right thing to do, Soleimani apparently was planning, especially we already saw, and he was involved in the attack on the embassy in Baghdad. He was planning even worse things to happen to Americans and was planning attacks, not just that strike at the Baghdad embassy, the U.S. embassy, but his story came to an end when we hit him near the Baghdad airport, and it killed a number of Iraqi militia leaders, by the way. And this is a guy whose career was long and wide, the swath that he cut. Again, revered in Iran, certainly not by those who feared him. That bloody and brutal war in Iraq helped really shape and define Soleimani. And that, remember, happened throughout almost the whole 80s, from 80 to 88. and he's part of that Revolutionary Guard. So that's when they got economic power, political power, and he was there in his 20s, and he had those missions behind what they would call enemy lines, but then he certainly became the U.S.'s enemy, and he was planning on a couple of things to strike back at the United States. So clearly, eliminating him was a very, very big deal and a really good thing that that happened, but a shock to Iran. And you can bet that there's probably going to be some sort of retaliation. But this all happened because of the U.S. Embassy compound in Baghdad on New Year's Eve. Nobody was killed in that chaos. Iran took the responsibility for it, and they ended up in the situation where this airstrike was necessary and eliminated Soleimani and some other Iraqi militia commanders who were revered, who had many people who followed them, etc. So I think the pressure to strike back is going to be there. So buckle your seatbelts. We'll see what happens. But this is, I think, a big win for the U.S. in the suffering no fools category. You strike us, and we're going to strike you. And that's exactly what this was about. And taking out a top Iranian general, was great. Definitely. So there you go. A lethal strike. Very choppy waters out there, my friends. Very, very choppy waters. I mean, if you remember, Mark Esper said breaching the Baghdad embassy was not a good idea. And, of course, Esper, who's the defense secretary, called on the international community to work with us, the U.S., to pressure Iran on the behavior and what was going there. And the rest of the international community to come together to condemn what Iran's behavior was. And so the pressure was there, and the strike was easy. I shouldn't say easy, but it was the time, the opening to do that, I guess, is the best way to put that. Because we swing into 2020, we know there's going to be more conversation about impeachment and what's going to happen with the Senate, and we're not there yet, of course. But Republican representatives say that the Dems threaten to vote for impeachment. So if we roll the clock, you know, back a little bit, you had Andy Biggs, Republican from Arizona, who said that he witnessed Democratic lawmakers being threatened to vote in favor of impeachment articles against the president. So there's still people in the last couple of days or two that are reacting, our lawmakers reacting to it. So now what happens? Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, if you're keeping score, has not handed over the documents to the Senate for a trial. That would be the impeachment articles against the president, which was abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. The House voted in favor of the impeachment articles, but again, they have to be handed over to the Senate, and that hasn't happened. So wait for that to happen. Probably next week, I would say, is when we will most likely see that. Coming up next, it's about the numbers. They are everywhere, very significant, and we're talking we can count on the flip side. Hang with us.
We all hear the stories in the news. The good guy uses a gun to protect his family from criminals, and he's the one arrested. The legal system is not fair, and responsibly armed Americans are political targets. So here's how you can take a simple and rewarding journey to complete self-defense confidence. Simply text GCN to 87222 to discover how the USCCA can give you the training, education, legal, and financial protection you need to truly protect the people you love. Don't risk everything and leave your family vulnerable. Now it's time to prepare and protect yourself. So if you're ready to take your next step as a responsibly armed American, you're ready to truly become your family's ultimate protector. Text GCN to 87222. Discover your life-saving USCCA member benefits today. Again, that's text GCN to 87222.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women. Here's a clip from The Rachel Ray Show testing the results of Instantly Ageless.
Board-certified dermatologist Dr. Whitney Bowe.
If you're looking to try to turn back the clock on a budget, you know, in the privacy of your own home, but actually there's some recent technologies emerging, almost like changes the behavior of the skin while it sits on the skin.
She went off to try a product called Instantly Ageless.
Yeah.
Instantly, you could see a difference. Even the cameraman were like, wow, look at the difference.
Yeah.
But I would definitely use this product.
This product, within minutes of applying it, it was actually a very dramatic rejuvenation.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com.
The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at DrinkSuperTea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's DrinkSuperTea.com, 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
So many numbers, I don't know where to begin. Let's talk about this guy. Yeah, you remember the affluenza teen, Ethan Couch? So he leads off, we can count, jailed again in Texas. Yep, they used the affluenza defense at his trial for killing four people while driving drunk. He was picked up on Thursday, 22 now, booked into a jail in Fort Worth. He tested positive for a psychotic compound in marijuana. His attorney isn't responding to all the myriad of questions. Everybody's looking for a comment. Remember, he was 16 at the time of the crash, and a psychologist told a juvenile court that he was affected by affluenza or irresponsibility caused by family wealth, which is outrageous. So initially 10 years of probation, and then, of course, there were all these weird things that happened. He was jailed after going to a party where alcohol was served. Then he went to Mexico with his mother to avoid punishment. Then he was released in 2018 after serving a two-year sentence. Time's up, buddy boy. No affluenza defense for you. This one's kind of creepy for all of you in Mississippi. I know you know what I'm talking about. I don't even have to say it, right? Then another disturbance. Fourth inmate killed. Violence is escalating in the Mississippi prisons. So just 5 days after the Department of Corrections locked down prisons statewide. And so an inmate was killed, then they locked them down, then three more died, and several have been injured. And it's crazy. The lockdown was prompted by what they called a major disturbance at South Mississippi Correctional Institution. And that hasn't stopped the violence, though. So the 25-year-old Walter Gates was killed late New Year's Eve in an incident at Parchman. And then there were others injured there. And then you had more problems that just seem to spread after that. And it feels unusual to me. Well, not that can't happen, but it's like, you know what it is? It's like a war. That's what it is. It's a war, and it was ignited. So the spark has been lit, and God bless the security there, because I used to do television series when I was an anchor reporter on TV, and I remember going to so many prisons, especially in California, the Lompoc Penitentiary, the big one. And I interviewed a Mary Alita, and I was never so scared in my life. And walking in that prison, I thought, boy, this is a deterrent. It kind of felt like Rahway Prison in New Jersey. All right, so that's a sad thing. And this is a sad thing, too. 228 police officers died by suicide in 2019. You don't help. I mean, you don't think about that, but that's what they're saying. There's a Massachusetts-based nonprofit. It actually tracks police suicides, and that's the number they had. It's the highest number that they've reported yet, and there's a thing called Blue Help, and they compiled the statistics, and they say it's disheartening to see this, and it allows individuals and agencies to report officers' suicides, death on the websites, and it's the fourth year they've collected all this data. And I think that there, of course, there's a terrible problem with what so many police officers have to deal with. I mean, imagine the pressure. I said this having people in my family who have been police officers. The whole idea of protect and serve, and the idea that you save a life, that you rescue someone, that you help someone in danger, has to be fulfilling. But then the idea that your life is, I mean, this is the deal. Your life is on the line, let's face it, when you're out there, because you don't know what you're going to encounter. And not that that hasn't always been the case, but now in today's world, I think it's even so much more prevalent that you could go to the window and, you know, it used to be that you weren't just shooting police officers. You didn't want to be that person, because then everybody was after you, and you didn't want to go to prison for that. But now it's a whole different world, right? Yeah, so that's tough on those families. No doubt about that. Very, very tough. All right, nothing like a midnight wedding. And there were a lot of people that had midnight weddings. That's how some people usher in the New Year's. Others do kisses and cheers and everything else at midnight. About 3,000 pounds of confetti showered the sea of people who were at Times Square as they waited for the ball to drop. 3,000 pounds of confetti. Somebody has to know that they needed that much, right? Because it has to look that way, especially if it's all over TV. And it did. It just looked like it was endless confetti. So good for them for doing it upright in that city. Definitely. How about this? UPS expects you to return more gifts this year. We had a gift return because I got a sound bar for the hubs for Christmas for TV. You can get them at Best Buy and wherever. And he had ordered himself one on Amazon. So that one got sent back. And they say UPS says they expect to process 1.9 million return packages, and that its National Return Day was Thursday, so they don't know exactly what it is, but then they'll have some on Friday, obviously, too, and they think that that record just keeps going up, and part of that is because so many people get things sent to them, and how much are they buying from somebody else sending them the same thing, or they don't want that, and that's what they have to send back to, like, Amazon, I would think. The National Retail Federation said more than half, 55% of shoppers, plan to return or exchange any unwanted gift within a month of receiving them. You know, there's some people that, I bet you my mother was like this, there's some people that there's no way they would return a gift. I mean, it's silly, because if it's not what you wanted or whatever, but if you had to go through that rigmarole and do what you have to do to, I know there's people that wouldn't return gifts. I think my mom was one of them. you know, print out the label, go take it back, whatever. A couple of other things to get to worth mentioning. You know, we talk about technology a lot on this show here and there because it affects all of our lives. Believe it or not, of course it does, right? And Apple had a record 2019 despite no new gadgets. They didn't have a gadget line. So they had lower iPhone sales in 2019, but they still had a great year. Their stock was up 87% for the year. It's about $290 a share, if you were curious about that. How about this story? I love this story. There were some homeowners in North Carolina that called 911. They thought there was an intruder in their house, but it really was a rogue Roomba. Officer, we hear movement downstairs. They were alarmed. They paused the movie. They had to find a safe place. They made the call in muffled voices. Oh, so scary. In fact, they pulled out their gun. They were protecting their 2-year-old daughter who was sleeping, and it turned out that once they showed up, oh no, it in fact was the Roomba. The Roomba went awry. Can you imagine that? We heard noises downstairs. There was definitely someone rummaging through our stuff. Oh, that would freak me out. And your mind is not going to, oh, I think it's the vacuum. I think somehow the vacuum turned on itself. No, I don't think so. And this is really sad. The U.S. Embassy in Australia is saying to Americans, get out. Tourists, leave. Wildfires, like we see in California. Tourists on the south coast of New South Wales, that's where it's really, really bad, told people avoid the area this weekend. I mean, it's a cluster of wildfires. It's bad. 200 fires burning across Victoria and New South Wales. And that's some of the most populated areas there. They've had a dozen fatalities from the fires. And I guess these fires actually have been kicking up even more. They've been burning since October. And they fear so many animals have died. The koala bears, they've lost a lot of koala bears and other groups of animals, too, that have been caught in all of this. And I looked at some of the video from it. It's very, very sad, dangerous conditions. Because it's so dry, and it's, you look at a map of Australia, by the way, all over, and you just can see how thick the fires are, where they're dotted all over the place. So, Godspeed to those people in Australia. Hang with us. Much more to come your way next here on the show.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Introducing Reveal from GCNLife.com. Beverly Hills dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman invented Reveal, which contains polypeptides with natural botanicals and no parabens, sulfates, silicones, or dyes for a salon-quality hair growth product. Reveal. Here's Dr. Newman.
I've treated a lot of patients who lose their hair and they lose their confidence. We've created a unique set of polypeptides, which we call HPT6. The HPT6 contains the polypeptides from 6 different plants. The scalp infusion treatment should be used on wet or dry scalp. The Reveal hair care system is designed to be used for men and women alike.
Get Reveal at GCNLife.com with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So try Reveal today at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637. Plus a discount up to 25% off for Reveal at GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Robin Walensky.
Right now, breaking news. The U.S. military on high alert after a U.S. airstrike kills a top Iranian commander. American forces stationed outside the U.S. embassy in Baghdad after the compound attacked 2 days in a row this week. 750 Marines deployed to the region. New pictures show a charred reception room after Iranian-backed terrorists try to destroy the building. Iraqi forces being criticized for allowing the mob to pass numerous checkpoints and move into the green zone in Baghdad. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper says the U.S.
Democrats may take preemptive action. He tells Fox News,
"We're going to defend ourselves and our interests and our people in Baghdad."
And more than 3,000 soldiers called up from Fort Bragg in North Carolina, the troops being sent to the Middle East. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing at 800-605-6995. Immediately. That's 800-605-6995. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to them and give you their feedback. If they like what they read, they'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. They handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 800-605-6995 now for your free author submission kit. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 800-605-6995. That's 800-605-6995. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 800-605-6995 for your free author submission kit.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or have private insurance, you may qualify for a new continuous glucose monitor. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM can automatically and easily help you manage your diabetes more effectively. And by using a CGM, you can eliminate the one thing most people with diabetes dislike the most, finger sticks. Now you can automatically manage your diabetes and end the painful finger sticks. Solara Medical Supplies makes it simple for you to have a new CGM. We'll do all the insurance paperwork for you and deliver the newest in diabetic care technology right to your door. Take charge of your diabetes today with the help of a new continuous glucose monitor. Call now to learn more.
800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. That's 800-547-5331.
To be here, really among the works of Seamus Heaney. And I think so many of you know who he is because I've talked about him on the air before when I've talked about my dad and poetry and what poetry has meant in my life. And I'm with his nephew, Brian McCormick. And Brian, we're seated in an area where you can see his works around us. And for you, what does that mean? What's that like?
It's obviously a very special experience. Seamus Heaney was synonymous with this area. Much of his work, in fact, over 50% of his work is based around approximately a 6-mile radius of where we're sitting today. So this area meant a great deal to him, and the people within this community meant a great deal to him. Also, his family members are still live here, his brothers and so on. So for me to be involved in a facility such as Home Place is an exceptionally emotional one, to be honest with you, but one that I take great pride in, obviously, to have someone such as Seamus Heaney within this community. And obviously I'm a family member as well. It's one that's extremely important to me and one that I'm delighted to be involved with.
So as you know, him, your relationship to him being your uncle, did you ever get to sit around and hear him recite his poetry? I mean, what was he like to be around?
Well, certainly in family occasions he didn't recite his own poetry. I don't think that would have he wouldn't have been that type of person to roll out his own work. He was much more interested in throwing out a few local limericks and so on about some of the characters within the area. But I didn't hear him read in an informal basis his own work. Now, I've obviously been to readings that he did, and to hear Seamus read his own work was a very, very powerful experience, and it's actually one of the main draws that we have within our exhibition, is that people can hear him read those works through our audio wands, and as people go around the exhibition, they have a chance to listen to the works related to each of the sections within that experience, and that's one that we have found people relating to most, to actually hear him read those works in a building dedicated to his life and his works centred within the community that, as I said earlier, meant so much to him, is one that we have found a very emotional experience for people. We have regular laughs and tears. We actually joke here that tears are good for us, because it actually shows that people are really, really connecting with that amazing work. And I think that's the beauty of Seamus Heaney's work, is the fact that it is so accessible for everyone. People sometimes are under the impression that poetry can be quite highbrow and quite elitist, and it's something that we work very hard at here to ensure that that's not the case, that people from all walks of life and all interest levels can find a real deep connection with what we do.
I noticed that if you feel inspired and want to write a line or two, you can do that, and you also have a section for all the people listening to the show, where it's kind of a learning center, where you can, if you, like you say, there's this thing about being elitist, but it shows you, okay, this is what a poem is. This is how a poem can go. It can go this way or that way. And I think that's fascinating. So when the center was, I'll call it the center, when it was being laid out, was that one of the considerations? Let's make it so that people feel like they really understand poetry?
Yes, and that was very, very important for us. But we're also lucky that his work in itself allowed us a platform to do that, because that was one of the considerations that we had, that we always wanted the work to be at the core. Seamus Heaney himself was a man who didn't seek attention and didn't seek the limelight, but he wanted his work to speak for him, and that's something that we wanted to ensure was at the forefront of everything we did. But similarly, it was important for us to allow people an opportunity for that work to be broken down in a very approachable way. And as you rightly said, we have a few walls here, the anatomy of a poem wall, and that shows people the different aspects that poets use to actually develop that work. Another very interesting aspect of the exhibition is we have a replica of his attic study in Dublin, where he did a lot of his writing in his Sandymount home. And upstairs we have the Harvest Bow poem. And that shows people right from the first draft to the final draft, the work the poets undertake to actually get to that final draft. I think any of us, and I'm certainly unfortunately not a writer myself, but we're under the impression that people sit down of a Sunday morning and decide of that morning, I'm going to write a poem. That shows the visitor here that Seamus Heaney took a lot of time and effort to cultivate that poem, to make changes, to make drafts. And it shows that the efforts that those writers go into to ensure that their final work is something that they're proud of to be published. But again, we do that hopefully in a way that people can relate to.
Another thing that you do here too as well is you get to see the Nobel Prize speech, which is fascinating and I think really draws people in. Do you remember when he won the Nobel Prize?
Yes, I would have been in my early 20s, I think it was, and as I'm sure you saw in the video, he was in Greece on a holiday with his wife Mary, and at that stage it was pre-mobile phones, and he was very difficult to reach, and I think he was one of the last people to find out that he actually had won. But finally, when the message had got through to him that he had won the Nobel Prize, as he says on the video that he just mentioned, he made a concerted effort to contact family members to share that moment with him. And I was actually very fortunate that when he phoned my home house, I happened to be there, and I was the person that picked up the phone to him. There had been no one else at home. My mother, who was Seamus's sister, my mother happened not to be there, so I was the first person in my house to actually talk to him at that time. And that was obviously a very, very special moment for me, to try and indicate to him the excitement that we were all feeling at home. And it's one that, I have to be honest, it still sticks with me to this day, to say that I was able to share that phone call with him. So yes, I do remember that vividly. And then there was a party, needless to say, in Ireland. There was a party locally here for him, which I was fortunate enough to attend, and we all shared in that moment. And the video shows that in fact the whole of Ireland shared in that moment with him, because he truly was someone that the Irish people really, really connected with, and that was a moment for the whole country, as it were.
Which is how the man was, right?
Yes.
He's accessible, just as it's accessible to walk around here and feel like you know him. That's why you get the tears and the emotion, and
yes,
that's a really good thing. Do you have a favorite poem of his?
I suppose my favorite poem, and it's actually the one that he recites at the end of the Nobel video, would be the Clearances 3, that starts out with the first line, "When all the others were away at Mass, I was all hers to be peeled potatoes." That would be that's my favourite. I think the words in there are so evocative, and I'm sure we've all shared moments like that with our parents, and it brings you right back to that moment. And then he talks about it moves on from that to when he shares final moments with his mother on her deathbed, and it's just it paints pictures that I think that anybody would really, really connect with those words. So yeah, that would be my favorite.
That's lovely. In wrapping all of this up, though, as we bring it back to people listening and coming to Ireland, and I keep, as an Irish American, I keep telling people you really owe it to yourself to put it on your bucket list. And this is a great spot. It's beautiful areas, as you said. So much of this poetry was inspired in the 6 mile radius of this spot, so you could walk around and get that feeling, I think, that he had, and I think that would be special.
Yeah.
But when people come here and they leave, what do you hope they take away?
I suppose, first of all, we want them to take away an experience, and I think that's what we provide with people, a true, authentic experience. They have an opportunity to get a window into Irish life, and to do that via Seamus Heaney's poetry, as you said, a Nobel Prize winning poet, but one that everyone can relate to, and it gives people an insight into the importance of community to that man, and the importance of this area. And we're actually developing, we hope to have them ready for next year, a series of literary trails where people can go out into those key spots where Heaney wrote about, such as Toner's Bog in the poem Digging, Church Island, The Forge at the Hill Head, the Fishway Tomb. So we're working on that at present to extend the reach of Home Place out into that beautiful landscape. But I suppose what we have found is that people find a real connection to this area when they do our exhibition and when they come into Home Place, and it's one that becomes a very personal experience, and it's one that I would encourage people to make the effort to come here, because I know, I understand I'm coming at it from a slightly biased position, but it's one that the reaction that we've had from visitors, and we've had visitors from all over the world, some 22 countries at this stage in the 2.5 years that we've been open, but one that people really, really connect with, and it becomes a very, very powerful and emotional experience, and it's one that I would certainly encourage your listeners to try to make time to come to visit us here in Ballaghy, South Derry.
Perfect place to end this. Brian McCormick, thank you so much.
Shot at in Mexico, 100 drinks at a well-worn bar with some shady-looking characters in Vegas, riding a bike from Dallas to Seattle on a bet, scribbling the words dungeon on a napkin while two passengers next to you on a plane wonder, What the heck does that mean? I'm Kate Delaney, and what does this have to do with my success? And why do you care? It's part of my journey that I want to share with you in my new book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Luckily now I can laugh at some of what seemed like utter disasters at the time. Can any of you relate? That's exactly what you'll discover by reading my book. I picture you on a boat, beach, or relaxing in the backyard, laughing out loud until you rupture your spleen. Well, hopefully not. While pulling out some seriously rare and secret stuff. Doesn't matter what you do or where you are right now, anyone in any walk of life can use what I learned in my years of crisscrossing around the United States pursuing my dreams. So what do you want to get out of life? Happiness? Contentment? Why are you here? Pick up my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, at Amazon.com.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-976-1460. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-976-1460. That's 1-800-976-1460. 1-800-976-1460.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Wow, such an important subject and something that we've talked a lot about on this show. I am thrilled to welcome to America tonight, he's in our virtual green room right now, Ray Emperor, and he's written a book called Global Warming and Climate Change, a brief primer, including the Paris Agreement of 2015. Ray, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Kate.
So let's dive right into the book first. And of course, I love the subtitle where you say, including the Paris Agreement of 2015. When that agreement happened, first of all, what did it mean to you as you watched that unfold? And what is the news that you wanted people to take away from your book in reading that?
I think there was a great sense of achievement when that agreement was actually negotiated, because nearly 200 nations were in the mix, and every one of them approved a final result. So it was a tremendous effort, the first major effort in some time to address climate change.
Yeah, one of the things that you talk about is that there are really workable solutions, because that's what people talk about in And they say, well, what are they? In reducing the use of fossil fuels and replacing them with clean energy solutions through wind and solar generation, which I've seen firsthand in different areas, like Palm Springs, for example, and that doesn't produce any greenhouse gases. It's very, very significant. What else would you say that people don't understand about these workable solutions?
Well, they need to understand that in addition to solar, there's wind. And these newer technologies are actually quite capable of meeting the needs. A lot of people fear that the traditional, coal or oil-fired electricity plant are not going to be able to be replaced. by these newer methodologies. And that's just not so, because we're seeing all over the world a tremendous rise in the use of both solar and wind energy.
Yeah, and you, and Raymond, you know this, that what a lot of the counterattack, I guess, to that would be people will say, well, it's not affordable, but that's not true either, is it?
No, it's not. It's quite affordable. What's not affordable is keeping this current system in place, because the more we generate CO2 and other greenhouse gases, the worse our climate situation becomes. It's imperative that the world turn around and stop using so much fossil fuel. If we don't, by the end of this century, we'll be in severe trouble.
Yeah, and you're you have a family and you have grandchildren, and do you think about them?
Definitely, certainly. I hope to leave a better world for our grandchildren than we have here.
Yeah.
Although it's not bad, but I mean, in terms of climate change, we're at the cusp now, a cutting edge, so we're a tipping point. If we keep going the way we are, slowly, we'll get there. But can we really afford to go slowly? That's the question.
Yeah.
We need to keep up the way in which we are impacting the climate by increasing the production of these green energy programs.
What, and under the same kind of theory of the counterattack of someone saying, well, Raymond, I think it's cyclical what we're seeing with floods, et cetera, what would you say to that? Because we certainly have seen a lot of catastrophes lately.
Yes, there is a cyclical nature to climate. But the point is that the cyclical nature is being is experiencing wider and more frequent swings toward extreme weather. Be it hurricanes or wildfires or tornadoes. We're seeing more and more of this in the United States even. And to just ignore it is not going to help.
We're speaking with Raymond Emperor, and the name of the book is called Global Warming and Climate Change, A Brief Primer, Including the Paris Agreement of 2015. We're talking about the climate crisis, and as Raymond's saying, it's real, and there certainly are ways to reduce greenhouse emissions when we talk about this, gas emissions. So, Raymond, what do you hope that the book will do? Will lead to more discussion, that kind of thing?
Yeah, this is not a scientific book. I'm not a scientist. I'm more of a public health administrator type. But I have an interest in this topic, and I think that most Americans, if they're better informed about it, would also see that there's a need to act. So I'm aiming my book at the millennials and also the Gen Xers, their parents, basically, because these are the people that are going to be in power very soon, and they need to be, educated on what the current situation is and what will probably happen if we don't act soon enough.
Yeah, and of course, what that time frame looks like, et cetera. And you mentioned it, that you've spent your life in public health, and you
right.
worked in certainly in a very interesting arena in that itself. Did you see, because I think when you talk about health and you talk about your experience there, in a way, it does kind of dovetail into having this discussion about the future and climate change. Don't you think that you bring something to the table from your background?
Oh, definitely. The American Public Health Association had named this past year as the year of climate and health. And there's such a linkage between climate and the way people experience it. It's more difficult on people who are poor, low income, or sick to digest the climate change than people who are well and younger.
Yeah. What's been the reaction to you when you, and of course you've written other books, but what was the reaction to this book from friends and family and people around you who know you professionally?
Well, I think they were excited because this is something I've never tried before. My other books have been quite different. And I spent, nearly a year doing this, putting this together. And during that time, I had numerous conversations with people, friends and relatives, about the book, and I got a lot of encouragement.
So because it was so different, and as you said, taking a year and putting it together, researching and trying to figure out how you're going to do it, kind of like a jigsaw puzzle, I would imagine. What was that experience like?
Well, it was interesting. I was very stimulated by the challenge of doing this. I had to do a lot of research because I'm not a scientist. And I delved into it, and I studied, I think I have 33 or 34 different sources in this book. that I used to document what I'm doing, what I was doing. And so it took me a while to come to grips with the language of climate change and global warming. But it really isn't all that difficult to understand. It's basically just the accumulation of greenhouse gases to a rate that has been unprecedented in all of history.
And so when you delved into that research, and as you said, all the 33, 34 sources, what was the most, I guess, surprising fact that you found out or something that you uncovered that just really was something you weren't expecting to see?
Well, one thing I uncovered was sort of interesting. Back 100 years ago or more, electric cars were one of the major ways that people were experiencing transportation. Back in the early part of the 20th century, electric cars became battery-powered cars, became very popular because they were so affordable and they worked so well. And now we're seeing a renaissance in that technology with battery-powered and plug-in vehicles. So that was very interesting.
Right, to see that here at one time, really electric cars could have been pretty prevalent, but there probably was a movement to squash that, I would imagine.
Well, of course, with gasoline, was, you know, oil was discovered and gasoline was much cheaper.
Yeah.
And, of course, when the electric starter became available in 1912, no more cranking was necessary to start your car. The electric car, all you had to do was push a button, even then. With an old model T, you had to crank it until 1912. And then when that came out, the market quickly shifted to the gasoline-powered cars.
Yeah, which of course was such a huge change. What would you say that people, because this would be, in the research you did and somebody reading Global Warming and Climate Change, a brief primer, including the Paris Agreement of 2015, what would you say that somebody who reads this and they get kind of, for lack of a better way to describe it, fired up and want to do something, what would you tell them to do? Spread the word, spread the book, that kind of thing?
Certainly, in my book, I have a whole chapter dedicated to how other organizations around the world deal with climate change, and I listed a number of them, I think 11 or 12 different organizations.
Sure, so they could reach out to some of those organizations that you listed.
Organizations like the Sierra Club, Greenpeace, the Union of Concerned Scientists, the Climate Reality Project, Nature Conservancy, League of Conservation Voters, and there are other progressive groups as well.
Yeah.
Some of them more localized.
Did that, after doing this book and feeling good about it, and I want to tell everybody they can pick it up, of course, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble, .com, you can get it there, Litfire Publishing, that's another place where you can go to get Raymond's book. Will there be a part two?
I don't think so. I think I'm going to take a little break and think about what I'm going to write about next, if anything. It might be, delving further into it, but at this point I haven't made any decisions.
There you go, but you still have this one, and of course, just published really a few months ago at the tail end of 2017. So again, you can pick it up at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. Raymond Emperor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Case. It's my pleasure.
Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. Dahibo Tea Club's original pure Paudi Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com, 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.